What's Trending?
What's Trending is presented by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu. We start with the Royals, who are back at it tonight against the Baltimore Orioles out of Kauffman Stadium. 6:40 first pitch. Vern's On Deck show at 5:30. Seth Lugo gets the nod for the Royals.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. 2-4 against the Orioles last year, the Royals were, but obviously 2-0 in the postseason. This is interesting, though. Gunnar Henderson was picked in the second round of the 2019 draft. And, of course, we had Bobby Witt Jr. going number two, Adley Rutschman going number one. All three of those guys going to be playing at the K. Gunnar Henderson's been out. He's missed the first seven games for the Orioles, so he is back supposedly, allegedly, tonight for the Orioles. So it is the star of stars to go out and get you a standing room only ticket, which you can for very, very
tickets are pretty cheap tonight right now due to the chilly temperatures in the area. I think it's Bark at the Park. Or is that tomorrow? Oh, is that tomorrow or tonight?
Dogs love this
It's
weather.
One of the two nights. It's either tonight or tomorrow. Sunday's Vinny's bobblehead. I think one of the first bobbleheads of the first bobblehead.
Be great to bring your dog.
And the Baltimore Orioles, of course, the last time they played, and the Royals got the best of them in that AO
Wild
Card
the star
series.
Of stars playing. Speaking of Baker, do you know who the most famous alumni is of Baker University?
Yes, I do know the answer.
I bet Drew doesn't.
I do. He's a coach.
Yes.
Drew?
I have no idea. I probably know the person, but I don't know who it is.
Mike McCarthy. Final Four begins
really?
Tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Yes, in San Antonio. Auburn, Florida, Duke, Houston are the matchups. We have all four number ones like you did in 2008. The Royals game starts at 3. Should be over just in time for you to dive in and watch some Final Four coverage. Good sports day tomorrow. Really good sports day. I'm looking forward to these matchups. The Houston-Duke is fun to me because of Duke getting on that plane secretly and flying and playing the scrimmage at Houston, which is really interesting in this matchup.
In the NFL, a couple deals signed yesterday. Trey McBride, tight end for the Arizona Cardinals, becomes the highest paid tight end in league history. $76 million deal, $43 million of which are guaranteed, according to Adam Schefter. Also, Geno Smith, who we all know now is a member of the Las Vegas Raiders, he agreed to a two-year extension worth $66.5 million guaranteed, which is not much different than the deal that he didn't like in Seattle. The same kind of deal that Sam Darnold got, although Darnold in Seattle, they can get out of that after year one, but not much different financially. But the Raiders have their in their mind franchise quarterback for the next couple of years.
He did lead the NFL in completion percentage a few years ago at 69%. Geno Smith can still play. It took him a while. Obviously, he was really highly touted coming out of West Virginia. It took him a while, but the Raiders seem to be satisfied with what they have at the quarterback position. As far as Trey McBride, I think, didn't Dusty and Bob have
Trey
McBride?
They had him on Radio Row in New
That's
Orleans.
That's what I thought for Trey McBride. But Travis Kelce now, the second highest paid tight end average per year now that McBride got his pay.
Elsewhere in what's trending, we go to the NBA. The Memphis Grizzlies' Ja Morant had a game-winning shot last night. Earlier in the game, though, he had another finger gun gesture. For those who know the whole backstory, he's the one player in the league that just simply cannot do it.
He had a game winner. We're not even talking about the game winner.
He was fined $75,000 today after he received a warning from the league office just a few days ago. Then he made the gesture twice on Thursday. He's also the same player that, remember, was suspended about a year or so ago for brandishing a gun on social media twice, I think it is. He's the one player, like, extremely gifted and talented, also might be one of the dumbest players in the league.
There's so many other celebrations, and you're taking away from the great moment that you had.
$75K is a lot of money.
It's awesome. $75K is triple the money that Draymond Green got for choking out Rudy Gobert.
Jeez.
Lastly, the league's not messing around with Ja.
Lastly, on what's trending, don't forget our NFL draft party coming up in a couple Thursdays. April 24th, landing in Liberty. Bink, you'll be hosting with Chris Unocero. Everybody from the station's going to be up there. Starts at 6 o'clock. $965 up for grabs for the person that has the most draft picks correct. Not
and
just who's going where.
Come on, do it. Spec takes forever grading these things. It literally takes him forever to grade all these.
You get 1,000 of these bad boys or whatever.
And Spec is in that office. Nonstop.
Plus an autographed Chiefs helmet up for grabs. That's what's trending.
Yeah. Can't get wrong there. That's
here on Cody and Gold.
And get excited when we trade with Buffalo again.
We were giving Drew a hard time during the break because earlier today we read the story out of Cincinnati that said that their stadium lease could expire as soon as the end of this upcoming season. And their VP of the team basically said that if that happens, we would become geographic free agents. So there's now offshore odds on where will the Bengals relocate. So, Drew, you could become at 3-1 odds the St. Louis Bengals.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Or Battlehawks, yeah. But the Austin / San Antonio Bengals plus 350.
Nice.
Salt Lake City Bengals. There's your winner right there. 4-1. That'd Oklahoma City Bengals 5-1.
If they go to Utah, I'm not rooting for them. Sorry.
Why? What do you got against Utah?
What's wrong with Utah?
I don't know. Just,
seriously, what's this animosity towards Utah?
I'm not rooting for them if they go to Utah.
Toronto 7-1.
St. Louis.
No, that's
Mexico City 8-1. Orlando 9-1. Then further down the board,
ship them to Mexico City.
The London Bengals, Drew.
It's 20-1 with the Jaguars.
And then lastly, the Sacramento Bengals 40-1. Honolulu Bengals.
Oh, yeah. With 75-1. Sacramento Bengals.
Perfect. I can get behind the Honolulu Bengals. Give me an excuse to go to Hawaii.
What's wrong with Salt Lake City? They need the NHL now.
There's nothing wrong with the city necessarily.
Yeah, an NBA team and an NHL team.
I don't know. It's just
Utah is a good program. BYU. Utah would be a great place for the Bengals. I'd rather there than St. Louis. But now you, Drew, you want them in St. Louis.
No, I don't want them anywhere but Cincinnati.
It shouldn't matter. You never go to Cincinnati anyway. It's all good. You know, they move to another city. No big deal.
Look, if they go to London, then I think there's some...
The Dublin Bengals. I'm in Ireland.
London, you could do the Manchester City Bengals.
You could do your accent again. Your accent when you talk about Burrow.
The quarterback for the Bengals is Joe Burrow.
There you go.
All right, let's talk about the latest push, no pun intended, in the NFL league office when it comes to rule changes. The tush push has been tabled.
Yeah.
Okay. Till May, they still might, and I think they still will ban it. You told me before the show, I thought this was really interesting because we already talked about the tush push this week.
Yeah.
But you think that Chiefs fans should actually not want it to be banned.
No, I don't think it should be banned, nor should the Chiefs want it to be banned. And some of these teams need to think long and hard about what they're doing. A 2004 rule in the NFL, because before that, you couldn't push players. You had to push the guy around. Like if you were the ball carrier and Drew was coming to attack you, I had to push. If Drew was pushing you, trying to tackle you, I could push him, but not you.
Mm-hmm.
That was the way the rule was. 2004, that changed. You still can't pull the player forward. Like I can't take and pull you forward.
Yeah, Cody reminded us of that you're not allowed to do that earlier in the week.
You can't pull somebody forward. But here's the deal. How many times last year did you see Pacheco pass the line of scrimmage or whatever, and you see Trey Smith get behind him and push him or Creed Humphrey? The Chiefs utilized that a lot. When a guy caught, something near the line of scrimmage or a running back got through the line, guess who was there pushing him? Trey Smith and Creed Humphrey did that a lot last year with the ball carry to get those extra yards, get behind Kareem Hunt and push him. Not talking about 3rd and 1 and 4th and 1 like a traditional tush push, but they were pushing the ball carrier forward past the line of scrimmage, and they had a lot of success doing it. Trey Smith was very good at doing it last year. What I'm saying is if they change this rule and they say you can no longer push a player, well, that takes that stuff in account as well, where you can't push them even past the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
I've seen the Chiefs utilize that to get first downs. They got a lot of first downs by pushing the ball carrier forward. If they outlaw the tush push, you got to outlaw that too, because what you're saying is you can't push players forward. That would hurt the Chiefs.
That's the verbiage, I guess, they're working on. It sounds like the Packers are going to come back with some clarification on the language of it in May to potentially get more votes to ban it. Because, it will not. They don't want it. Even though we all know it's because of the Eagles, they're trying to make it a little more generic to where it's not just clearly the one play involving a quarterback. To your point, it'll be more of an entire offensive thing.
It's got to be. It can't just be the quarterback. It's got to have, which teams aren't going to like that. Again, the Chiefs utilized that tush push beyond the line of scrimmage.
Do you think it should be banned? Because I have said, I don't care if it gets banned or not. I have no problem if it does. Like, I won't be up in arms because I think it's a boring, boring play to watch in the NFL. And it's all about eyeballs and keeping fans captivated. And it's a boring play. But I do not think they should ban it just because the Eagles are having success with it. And that's what it feels like. The injury concern stuff, right now there is no evidence that it's caused more injuries. Some coaches have leaned on that. Andy Reid has kind of played both sides of it, like not trying to go firm in one direction or not. Whereas there's been some coaches like Sean McDermott that have been steadfast.
If Alex Smith was still his quarterback, he'd want it.
The tush push?
Yeah. I think he'd want it. And it depends on what you want to do. The Chiefs obviously aren't going to do it, but they do utilize it, not in the situation with Mahomes, but they utilize it with the ball carrier going forward. It's why the Chiefs have been listed as one of these 16 teams that oppose it, because they do utilize this and they'd have to take everything away. Forget about the tush push. They would probably implement a rule where you cannot push a ball carrier forward, and that would affect the Kansas City Chiefs. It is funny how Sean McDermott is on here when they utilize the tush push almost as much as anybody, but they're against it Maybe because it was stopped. Maybe because everybody figured out Josh Allen only goes to the left.
I'll say it's a little bit different. It still involves. It's a little bit different, but it still would fall under probably the generic
rule. I'm fine with them doing the tush push. I'm fine with it. It's within the rules. Might as well do it. I'm just tired of the NFL changing things that don't need to be changed, like the kickoff. I still hate the kickoff rule that they changed. I know that they're going to do the onside kick now, or it's going to be tabled, but they've thought about doing it where you can do it the entire game as long as you're trailing. I think it should be whether you're tied or trailing. You can do it whatever. So you shouldn't just limit it to team trailing, but you got to declare it that you're going to do an onside kick because you have to because the way the alignment is. But they already changed it and tried to make it safer by saying five guys had to be on each side of the ball and two of them had to be on the hat between the hash and the sideline. So they've already changed those rules, but that's a part of football. That's the strategy of coming back in a game. Sean Payton did it with the Saints, the onside kick in a Super Bowl earlier. I mean, these are a football-type plays to go forward. So, no, I don't want to see the tush push eliminated because I'm tired of football plays being eliminated.
913-586-7965. Someone says, yes, the new rule states that no player shall push specifically Jalen Hurts forward while he's carrying the football. Obviously sarcastic, but I think he's the one player that's why we're even having this discussion. He's better at it than anybody else. He's got more lower body strength than anybody else in the league from that position. And that's why they have so much success with it, whether it was Jason Kelce or now, what's his name, Juergens, I guess it is, as the center.
It's all worked out even with Kelce retiring. It's still working. Jason Kelce was a big impetus for why they did it because he could withstand it. The center takes a lot of abuse, man, because they're always at the bottom of the pile. And not getting hurt, but they do get landed upon. I just look at this thing, Alex, and say, well, if they do that, go back and watch the Chiefs games and watch how many times Trey Smith got out there and was pushing Kareem Hunt from behind.
Yeah, every team's doing that.
They are doing it. But if you outlaw the tush push, you got to outlaw that, right? Because it's the same type of concept. You're pushing a ball carrier in the situation. Instead of a quarterback, it's still a carrier of the ball you're pushing forward. It's too many semantics, and you're opening up Pandora's box if you eliminate the tush push because then you're eliminating that stuff as well. I like the rule you can't, you know, pull people forward. That's fine. It's already part of the rules. You can't do it.
So they don't always even call that, though.
They don't.
We've seen it happen. We have seen plenty of games.
But they can do it. They can call it.
And that's my question would be, if they ban this in May, and it's not involving the quarterback, and it's what you're describing, this alignment's pushing, let's say, a running back forward or whatever during a play, how often will they actually call it? That'll be the biggest question I would have if they're going to make it more general, because I think the intention of the rule would still be about the quarterback, even if it's going to be written generally. We all know they're going to enforce it involving the quarterback more than they would. Isaiah Pacheco's got the ball, and Trey Smith 5 yards down the
field
is giving
them a shove.
Which did
result in touchdowns for the Chiefs last year, because they did it across the goal line as well, pushing the ball carrier. Because all the times you say it, pushing. You sit there saying it, why aren't they doing it? And they do it. But the Chiefs did utilize that a lot. I think it would hurt them.
Coming up in 45 minutes, Fan Club Friday, as we do each and every Friday, we'll talk about not only what's going on in the NFL, we'll find out a little bit more about Jackson Kurtz from Channel 9. He'll join us for Fan Club Friday for the first time. You guys see him on TV all the time, so we've been trying to have Jackson on, and today works out perfectly. We'll have a couple drinks. We'll have a final hour of the show heading into the weekend.
We can drink now, can we?
You can. You already have...
Red Bull.
You got Red Bull.
Someone asked if I'm drinking, and I am. It's Red Bull.
Yeah, you just got some energy.
But I'll take some beer.
We'll have some.
Okay.
With that, we might have something else. You can have the beer.
Coming on Fridays.
Some other stuff.
Love coming on Fridays.
It's two Fridays in a row for you.
I know.
Cody will be back on Monday. So I was thinking a little bit as I saw yesterday on SportsCenter, they were talking about Alex Ovechkin of the Washington Capitals in the National Hockey League, and he is two goals away from tying Wayne Gretzky for goals in the NHL. He's three away, of course, then from breaking the record. Seven games to go. It looks like it's going to happen.
And Alex.
It's an all-time record. And I was thinking, there's the balance that it's hockey, and I get it. Not everybody likes hockey. I'm a very, very casual hockey viewer. It has to be the playoffs, or it has to be the Four Nations thing that they did. That was awesome, right? So some of this might just be, it's hockey, so nobody's paying attention in this market as much. But in general, we were talking about this earlier. I don't think records are viewed the way we used to in sports. And we asked Jake Eisenberg kind of about that a little bit too. And you'll hear our conversation with him in about 15 minutes. But do you guys view, even whether it's Ovechkin, whether it's an NFL record, whether it's an MLB record, and Major League Baseball has always been tied to records more than any of the other sports. But I don't think people appreciate or care or make a big deal. We're more interested in the Ja Morant drama, the LeBron James on the court, off the court stuff. Is he the GOAT or not? And in the NFL, we're having the Brady and Mahomes ring debate. We're having Belichick, Andy Reid debates. We're like, all these things are more interesting, I think, to most people than, oh, how big of a deal that the record that's not, I'm not talking about Gretzky here, but a 50-year-old record, pick a sport, is now going to go down. I'm not saying we never mention it. I don't feel like we talk about the way we would when, like, growing up, even in the 90s, I feel like I heard about records more, like, oh my gosh, can't believe Dan Marino did blank, or who, like, I just don't think we hear that as much.
Yeah, I think it's definitely more hallowed in baseball, like Jake was talking about, because you go back, it's, you know, 100 years and past as far as what baseball has been talked about. But it's been stopping what you're doing and watching. You know, the home runs with McGuire and Sosa back when they were, you know, chasing each other for the home run record at the time, it was must-see TV. Did McGuire hit a home run? Did Sosa hit a home run? You know, McGuire played and Sosa played at Kauffman that year, and people went out in droves to watch
it. Unbelievable.
People were driving to St. Louis and Big Mac Land to see McGuire hit home runs. But they stopped what they're doing for baseball, and Barry Bonds was chasing Hank. But football, because of expanding the games to 17, which we'll get to 18 at some point, it kind of loses its luster as far as what the records. Again, like I said, O.J. Simpson ran for over 2,000 yards when there was 14 games. That's much different than 17. That's a lot of extra yards you can gain. That, to me, that's more impressive than doing it than what even Saquon Barkley did. Doing it in 14 games is more impressive to me than waiting till the end to be able to do it. But the bottom line is, we care about what you did this past weekend. The fantasy football in us, how many touchdowns you have, how many yards, daily fantasy, the DraftKings, that kind of thing. We want to care about what you did now than what you did then. When LeBron did pass Kareem, it was kind of a stop on TV.
They stopped the game.
Yeah, stopped the game. Stopped the damn game, brought out Kareem and everything.
That's true.
I wonder if it's because he was on the Lakers why it was. I don't think it was, but I wonder if it's the reason why they stopped the game, the reason why it was such a big deal, is because it was LeBron, who was a Laker at the time, of course.
I mean, Adam Silver was there.
I think it would have worked wherever he was playing.
So I think it would have as well, but I wonder if there was any extra juice just because Kareem's a Laker, LeBron was a Laker, doing it in a Lakers uniform at Staples, like all of it just combined together made it a bigger moment.
Well, I'm sure, but I just think that there's probably, in speaking of generalities, but people would probably know, yeah, LeBron's close to breaking the record, whatever, but I don't think many people know that Ovi is getting ready to pass the great one. He's getting ready to pass Wayne Gretzky.
How much of that is an NHL thing still in this market?
I got some of it.
Right, but that's
me,
a huge part.
But to me, you look at, though, the most famous game in the history of this country is a hockey game from 1980. So,
but it wasn't the NHL. It was because everybody was around
the amateurs.
Everybody was around the pride of, you know, of the United States. The same reason why the four nations thing was big, because you were rooting on your country.
Yeah, it's not an American doing it. So maybe that's part of it with Ovi.
I think that's definitely part of it.
But to break a Gretzky goal record, I know he's not even close to the assist record, but goals, he could pass him within three. To me, that's a stop the sports landscape moment because a guy just broke a major record. I mean, this is the home run record. This is beating Pete Rose's hit record. This is beating all. I mean, this is a major record that he can break, and I don't think people know about it.
And there's some that we all view as untouchable, too. You know, like I mentioned Ricky Henderson, the stolen base, 1,400 stolen bases. Nobody's catching that. I mean, Will Chamberlain, 100. I know some people think it never happened, but nobody's getting 100 points.
Right.
Why do you not laugh at that? That's pretty impressive.
Sure, and that's another one that'll never be broken. So there's a lot of records like that that you think are never going to go down. Did you think of those, which one's the take the Will Chamberlain thing out of it for a second, Bank, please. What's the most difficult one to achieve?
I think the 56-game hitting streak.
Yeah, nobody's touching Gehrig.
Cal Ripken's consecutive start streak because baseball players have injuries getting out of the shower like Freddie Freeman did.
And load management, the resting guys.
Load management. Like, totally. I think Ripken's consecutive start streak is safe.
Yeah, Gehrig, I mean, he had 2,100 consecutive games for the Yankees. Obviously, Cal Ripken Jr.'s record, I guess I should say. I mean, there's a lot of those that I just don't think you're... Cal Ripken broke that, and nobody... That was one people didn't think was breakable. I just don't think... I don't think DiMaggio or Lou Gehrig's are going to go down.
NFL ones, when they go to 18 games, they're all going to be broken.
Somebody mentions the John Stockton assist record, which...
Hey, Utah, that's your state. That's your state, man.
Hang on. Look, city-wise, it's a no for me. But look, the Utah Jazz with, you know, John Stockton, of course, and the teams that they had. But Stockton has over 3,000 more assists than Chris Paul, whose career is already going down. I mean, he is Chris Paul's second on this list. So, and LeBron is 11,000. He's not catching John Stockton's assist number. Somebody mentioned that on the text line. I don't know if that one will be caught.
You didn't like the mailman and Stockton playing together? You didn't like that crew? Salt Lake crew.
I mean, obviously they were very good for a specific time.
Yeah.
That logo back then was great. Those uniforms back then were incredible.
I agree. Obviously, people have thoughts on Karl Malone as well.
Sure. Yeah.
Post playing career, but I mean, Utah,
they had a great Olympics in Salt Lake City too
for that certain period of time. Like, it was fine. But again, it's just not for me.
Salt Lake Bengals.
Someone says, yes, gold, which Wilt Chamberlain record are you talking about? Because there's a lot of people, I joke with Carrington all the time about this. Yeah. Carrington gives me a hard time because he's convinced it didn't happen, the 100 points. He's because there's no video of it, he thinks it's fake.
In fairness,
and it's a whole online conspiracy thing.
But he believes the women?
I don't know. Is Kobe's record more impressive than Wilt's record just because of the competition around the time? I think you could say even though Kobe didn't get to 100, I think Kobe scoring 82 the way that he did, or Devin Booker even getting 70 like he did, or Cat getting 70, or Jokic getting 61 like he did the other night, that might be more impressive than Wilt Chamberlain playing against.
I hear you.
No offense to the guys back in the 100
points,
some
100
random
points,
dudes that just happened to be playing in the. I understand that. Cheryl Miller also scored 100 points in a high school game. That might be more impressive than what Wilt Chamberlain did.
Well, Chamberlain did several things that are impressive.
That also is true.
Without Blue Chew.
Hey, good. He didn't have to chew it and do it because he was fully capable.
He's fully capable of doing it.
Shout out to Wilt, man.
Shout out. R.I.P.
Someone says they believe Wilt on that one because they actually think that one actually happened.
Really? That's difficult, though. How many a day was it? Like 3 or 4 a day?
I can't remember.
Stats on that are hard to come by. I mean, that's...
It's hard, I think, with records, too, just because when you're talking about, like, eras and all that other stuff that we get into whenever we're talking about the GOAT discussion and all those other things, it's very difficult because, like, people now, you look at the numbers, and all in the NBA, I think it's particularly bad, where the older players don't like the newer players. And I don't know, like football, I think, celebrates everybody pretty well. Hockey, I think, does as well. But, you know, in the NBA in particular, it's like the older guys don't like the younger guys. And they might think it's easier now, not as much defense, all these little things that play into it. I think
Steph Curry, no matter what era, the way Steph Curry plays.
Well, that's part of the conversation now.
He could play in any era and he would have been just as effective.
LeBron would have been just as good in any era. Yes.
I do think
he would have dominated previous eras.
More so on baseball, but now the analytics and the sabermetrics in baseball. I mean, Vinny Pasquantino was on Hosmer's podcast and he was talking about how, you know, he's a big sack fly guy. That's a big part of him. Driving runs, help your team win. And from a statistical standpoint, it actually hurts him. And I think it's like makes him a negative war player. Stuff like that is just, it doesn't make any sense, but that's where we're at. Some of that has also changed how we view records and stats.
Well, Drew's right, though. We always judge by rings and goats. Goat discussion is pretty big, too. Who has more Super Bowl rings at the end? Burrow or Lamar? Josh Allen? Or Justin Herbert? Or does any of them get any at all?
Look, you already know what I'm going to say. It's certainly not Herbert.
Burrow will be the one left out. It'll be Dan Marino.
Does Burrow, be the one Allen, and Jackson, does Burrow ever beat Jalen Hurts? Will he ever have two? And who knows how many Jalen's going to have? Like, Burrow's no Jalen Hurts. We know that.
Right now, I would guess that they are... I would guess Jalen Hurts would have more because he's probably going to get to more.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll have more opportunities. Mm. That doesn't mean I don't think Joe Burrow's not going to get one, but
I think he might be Dan Marino. Not going to build a good team around him. All right, up next, we will get to the random question of the day. And Royals announcer Jake Eisenberg joined us a little bit earlier today. We'll ask him about this series against the Orioles. And has anything surprised him about the start of this 2025 Royals season? We'll get to the random question of the day here in about 15 minutes or so. Also, 25 minutes away from Fan Club Friday, kicking off, heading into the weekend. Jackson Kurtz from Channel 9 going to join us in studio. This is Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Drew Nixon, Jay Binkley. He's filling in for Cody Tapp today.
Hi.
Let's talk some Royals baseball, Bink. Jake Eisenberg joined us a little bit earlier on in the show. He joins us each and every Friday throughout the baseball season. And We got his thoughts on this upcoming weekend series against the Orioles, which begins tonight right here on 96.5 The Fan. But if you remember from last week, he told us about like a haunted hotel in Milwaukee. So I wanted to check in and make sure, you know, things were all right with him when he was in Milwaukee for the last couple of days.
Yeah, I had a feeling we were going to start there. No, Milwaukee was great. No supernatural activity to report. All restaurants and meals stayed where they should. It was a solid trip from that perspective.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
And Jake's a little weird, though, because I always think of Miller Park, man. I know it's American Family and all this, but that's Brew City, man. It's like a beer city. That ballpark is synonymous as Miller Park. It's just weird calling it an insurance stadium.
I mean, I guess it's a name, you know, like any other ballpark name. I mean, Guaranteed Rate Field is now just Rate. You know, Minute Maid Park is now Dykin Field. I mean, at the end of the day, like, they're all corporations, aren't they? So, like, they can have their naming rights. That's one thing that I love about Kauffman Stadium is that it's not, you know, a company, at least for now.
My favorite was Enron.
I think that helps it stand out. You know, heck, even Wrigley. Wrigley's a company, you know, if you really want to go that far. But, yeah, I don't know. It's not that weird. It's just a building with a name.
One of the biggest stories in sports for the first week of the season, of course, is these torpedo bats. Overblown, like, not a big deal, just need to wait and see. Where are you at, and what have maybe you heard? I don't know if you've talked to some players about it.
Yeah, I think it's overblown. I've talked to a couple players about it. I've talked to a couple coaches about it. I've talked to some other people around the league about it. And the sense that I get and where I've landed on it is that it's kind of similar to, you might remember a few years ago, that the axe handle was all the rage. Every guy was using that axe handle and trying to get a little bit more power in those wrists and some more stability. And there were some guys that loved it and some guys that tried it and didn't like it and some guys that swore by it. And then there was a few years ago, Paul Goldschmidt, you remember, was using that giant hockey puck counterweight knob, and he went on to win NL MVP, and everyone was like, oh my goodness, we got to use a counterweight knob now. Basically, like, it's innovation in terms of, you know, bat technology, so to speak, but I do think that it's similar to the other steps in the sense that some guys are going to love it, some guys are going to try it and find out it's not for them, some guys are going to just keep doing what they're doing because it's worked for them, and I think that overall, I don't know that you're going to look up at the end of the season and be like, oh, this guy's numbers are that much better because he used a torpedo bat. I think it's kind of whatever makes you feel good in the box.
I think when Michael Kay brought it up, more and more people started talking about that point. The funny thing is Aaron Judge is off to a great year. He didn't use it. Aaron Judge says, look at my numbers.
Yeah. And that's exactly the point. Is like, Aaron Judge isn't using it. There are other guys around the league that are off to great starts that aren't using it. And some guys are using it and are off to great starts. And maybe it's part of that. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's a mental thing where you're looking at the barrel and you're saying, okay, this looks a little bigger. I'm not saying it's nothing. I don't think it's the end all be all of baseball hitting in 2025.
And the one thing too, Jake, is other teams are doing it. The Twins catcher uses it. The Cubs have been using it. The Rays use it. I mean, Giancarlo Stanton allegedly used it last year, even during the playoffs, which, you know, they faced the Royals, of course, but it's not like the Yankees are the only ones doing it, and people and players inquire about it. I'm sure the Royals have inquired about it too.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's a little bit overblown. I think it's a fun thing to talk about, but I don't know that it's really affecting outcomes in the way that it's being purported that it does.
We're talking to Jake Eisenberg here on 96.5 The Fan. All right, let's talk about this Royals team. First time through the rotation. Maybe you didn't have the length in terms of the outings, but Cole Reagan's bounced back immediately as well, even in his second go. What do you make of what we've seen so far from the starting pitching staff?
Man, Reagan's stuff is so, so good. That fastball was really explosive the other day. And, you know, 10 Ks, a sixth, you know, career double-digit strikeout game. He's going to be just fine. I think the first turn through the rotation, I think there's probably, and I'm not sure that they would say this, but I think there's probably a little bit of an adjustment to pitching in cold weather for the first time. Now, that's true for the other guys, too, you know, on the other side of the field, but I think that's true for everybody. And so the grip might feel a little bit different. The weather's a little bit different, obviously. I thought Chris Bubich looked phenomenal. I mean, if that's what the Royals are going to get out of Chris Bubich, you know, every time through, I mean, that's the guy who's penciled in as your fourth or fifth starter, and that's after your three-headed monster of Reagan's, Lugo, and Waka. I thought Lorenzen was pretty solid, too, against the Brewers in his season debut. You know, ultimately, he gets charged for three runs, but he still struck out seven over the course of 5 1/3. So I think this is a rotation that has a chance to do some things that were pretty similar to what last year's rotation did. And ultimately, that gives this team a chance to win night in and night out.
How do you look at the series, Jake? And listen, the series that happened, you know, in April, they don't really matter in the grand scheme of things, but it's Baltimore. Royals went 2-4 against Baltimore last year. Of course, the postseason success they had against Baltimore, they're not off to a start that they won at 3-5. And I'm sure the Royals would like to flip their record too, but you know, in the grand scheme of things, when you look at these two teams, you know, the Orioles, one of these teams that we look upon as, you know, one of the teams to beat in the American League, and there's the Royals that made the postseason as well. In the grand scheme of things, this is actually a pretty big series.
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I think they're all pretty big series. Every 162 games, they all count the exact same amount when you look up at the end of September. So, yeah, every win counts, every loss counts exactly the same. And I think back to when the Royals and Orioles were playing very early on last season, too. You know, the Royals were at Camden Yards and played a really tight series against the Orioles. There were a couple of blown lead losses in there. And then the Orioles came to Kauffman Stadium. That was another really tight series. They were like 2 weeks apart in April last year. And we kind of looked around at the time, at least upstairs in the booth, and we were like, you know, these two teams, they might link up again come October, and it'll be completely different teams and fields once we get there, but they'll still be familiar with each other. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. And they played two really close games in the wild card round too. So all of these games are important because they give you a foundation for what might happen, you know, 5-6 months down the road. And as far as this series is concerned, I expect to see something very similar to what we saw last year in the playoffs and in the regular season, is close games between two really good teams that have young, dynamic lineups, really solid pitching, excellent, you know, bullpens. I think the Royals might have the edge in starting pitching. Bullpens this early on, I'll give you that thing. Bullpen roles are still, you know, a little bit fluid, but the Royals back end, Estevez, Urseg, Harvey have been lights out for the most part. I think these are two teams that match up really, really well, and it's understandable why I think they're going to be kind of neck and neck with each other over the next several years.
We're talking to Jake Eisenberg here on 96.5 The Fan. Of course, the Royals open up their series against Baltimore tonight. 6:40 first pitch right here on your home for the Royals, 96.5. So offensively, I don't feel like anything surprised me to this point, Jake. Like, if you tell me on a given night last year or this year already that maybe Bobby and Salvi and Vinny, and I guess let's throw India in the mix, if those guys aren't really on, it's going to be a struggle. You know, it's going to be tough to rely on 5-9 in the order, especially with where things are at right now in left and right field offensively. What stood out offensively for you? Has anything surprised you?
I can't say that anything has surprised me. I also think, and this is where I'll kind of agree with Bink a little bit, that it's six games,
right,
and it's hard to read into anything statistically in a span of six games, you know, really, really good or not so good or anywhere in between. So I think that you kind of got to wait and see a little bit for maybe, you know, 15 games, 20 games, you know, a couple of weeks before the statistics at least start to settle out. And you can kind of see maybe some actual trends of what's going on. I think it's a little bit too early to say, hey, this guy is going to be on fire, or hey, this guy looks really overmatched. I think it's too early for that.
And I think it's also fun. Gunnar Henderson supposed to be in the lineup for the Orioles. He's been out the first seven games of the year for the Orioles. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of Bobby Witt Jr. talk and Gunnar Henderson, the shortstops for the respective clubs. But it looks like he's playing. Have you heard? I mean, he's supposed to play this entire series. Is that correct?
That's what I've heard too. I haven't seen anything official, but that's what I've been hearing.
Okay, the stars there and Adley Rutschman and everything else with these games. Where do you come out on uniform gate, Jake? And I'm saying this because the other night I'm doing a show, right? The Royals were in Milwaukee. They wore the powder blue shirts and the pants. And, of course, people, I said, well, I think they'll, you know, they're still going to go back to the gray, but it's the opening day in Milwaukee. They wore the uniforms opening day in Kansas City. Of course, they wear them on Saturdays. But then the text line was telling me that it's not the case. They're going to wear those on the road. So I checked with the Royals. I even texted Steve Stewart. And, yes, the grays are still part of it, Jake, but I don't think there's an official road uniform, is there? But I do expect to see the grays on the road most of the time, don't we?
I mean, that would be my expectation, too. I mean, the word that I got about wearing them in Milwaukee on their opening day was simply that they're really cool. And you know what? I have to agree. Like, they are really cool.
Agree.
Why do you need even more of a reason than that? You know, wear them as much as you want, especially if you're going to put up 11 runs. I don't think those two things are a coincidence. But, you know, that being said, the powder blues are awesome. And I'm all for, you know, wearing them whenever the guys want to wear them. The gray's a good look. The you know, royal blue on the road for day games is a good look. The home whites are a good look. The powder blues on Sunday with the white pants and the blue stripe are a good look too. I mean, look, across the board, I think the Royals have a really nice set of uniforms. If I'm not mistaken, and don't go with me on this in totality, but I'm pretty sure tonight is the City Connects because it's a Friday night home game. And I love the Royal City Connects. So I'm excited to see those.
I think they're the best in the league, to be honest with you. Jake, I have the hat, the one they wear with the powder blues on Saturday, but it's also their batting practice hat too, right?
The Art Deco
with the white on the front. For the white on the front and the crown.
He's talking about
the hat they wear with the powder blues. They also wear that for batting practice, don't they?
Powder blues. Yeah, those are really clean. Yeah, those are clean. The helmets look incredible.
That's what I'm saying. I think the helmets are better than the hat. The gloss helmet look is so much better.
Whenever you get a helmet that matches the uniform, like, you know, they got the City Connect helmets too, I think that's next level.
Before we let you get out of here, I do have to. I know you're at the big league level right now. I have to ask you about Jack Caglione because you interacted with him in spring training. He makes his Double-A Arkansas debut, I believe, this evening down in Tulsa, where the Naturals begin their season. Just in your interactions with him, you know the fan base is fired up. Just what has stood out about how, I guess, he carries himself, and what would you tell fans that are obviously very, very excited one day to see him up with the Royals?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's exciting, right, to be able to look into the not-too-distant future at various guys that are in the minors and just getting started and dream on them a little bit and see, you know, what could be, you know, later this year or, you know, a couple of years down the road. And it's not just Cags, too. Like, there's a bunch of other guys. You know, Lewinder Avila struck out, I think it was 10 or 11 the other night in Omaha. John Raves hit a couple of home runs. Like, there are other guys that are making some noise in the minors, too. As far as Jack's concerned, This is the thing that kind of stood out to me in spring training, just kind of, you know, chatting with him a little bit, observing him in the clubhouse, talking to the guys that were his locker mates, like Alec Marsh. I asked Alec, you know, how he was doing and all that stuff. And what stood out to me was, here's a guy who has played at the highest level of collegiate baseball for a premier program and gone to the College World Series and been there, done that in terms of media and spotlight and XYZ. And like, he's got that, you know, big college experience polished to him, you know, when it comes to a media sense, and polished to him when it comes to a maturity sense. At the same time, you know, here's a guy who's also the sixth overall pick and knows how talented he is and is coming into spring training, understanding, you know, that he's going to start in Double-A or Triple-A or wherever, but knows that he's maybe not all that far off, and certainly comes into the clubhouse thinking like, okay, like, I'm here and I'm here for a reason. You know, I can be able to handle some of my stuff. What struck me is how well he balanced the understanding, how well he balanced knowing that he's a really, really good baseball player, but not necessarily giving off a vibe of that he's supposed to be there or that it would be ridiculous if he weren't there. You know, he did not take for granted the fact that he was in the big league clubhouse this year and knew that that was both an honor and a learning experience and an opportunity for him to grow. He knows he's a really, really good baseball player. He was also soaking up everything like a sponge. And it was really cool to, you know, observe, you know, fly on the wall, you know, how Vinny Pasquantino took him under his wing and really made him feel comfortable in a big league clubhouse for the first time. That's not always the case, you know, for guys who are entering a big league clubhouse for the first time. And I think that speaks to the level of camaraderie that exists in the clubhouse at Kauffman Stadium and how that filters down through the organization and the type of culture that the Royals have created for themselves and the rest of the organization. And I think that puts Jack Caglione and whoever comes up from the minors at any point in a really, really good position to succeed. And that's what impressed me about Jack, was how he had this, you know, affability and joy in being where he was. You know, holy smokes, I'm in a big league clubhouse. This time last year, I was playing a midweek game against St. Mary's or whatever, and also being incredibly talented and you know, playing really well in spring training.
Jake, I've talked to you for a long time, even back in the minor leagues. I have to ask you this question now that you're here at the big league club and doing your thing. You're going to be calling records at some point. You might be calling world championships at some point. We discussed this. Baseball records seem to be hallowed. People talk about them, the 500 home runs, the mile marks. They're a big deal in baseball. Compared to the football, I think it's cyclical because we care about what they did on Sunday because of fantasy football, the expanded schedule now, watered down that. But Alex Ovechkin sits three goals away from breaking the great one's record. I don't think people talk about it, but that is a major record in sports. How do you view things? Why does baseball records seem to be the most important?
think it has to do with longevity, Dink. Honestly, I mean, Major League Baseball has been around since, you know, the 1870s, 1880s, you know, in its modern form since 1901. And I think there's so much history with baseball, and you go back to the history of box scores or even statistics. I mean, the box score itself was pioneered by Henry Chadwick, who was a newspaper writer back in the 1900s, and newspapers and baseball were so tied together. And, you know, getting that newspaper in the morning and also checking out the statistics and the box scores was such a part of the joy of the game early on and the growth of the game early on, you know, the dead ball era and all throughout, that I think statistics and baseball statistics, they have such a longevity and they have such an aura about them because of how hallowed they are. And I'm not saying that that's not necessarily true for, you know, hockey or football or basketball, but as major sports in the United States of America, those have, you know, much less history overall than Major League Baseball does. You know, Major League Baseball has over 100 years of history. You know, NHL, NBA, NFL, you know, goes back to the 60s or 50s or 40s, or it's just not, there's just not as much time. There's not as many hallowed greats simply because of the longevity of the thing. And I think that's why baseball statistics stand out. I also think that it has to do with the fact that there is a baseball game every single night for a 6-month span, that it is part of the American, and really the North American, when you include Canada, it's part of the North American consciousness for a 6-7 month span every single night, in a way that other sports aren't. I've said this about baseball many, many times, and this is one of the reasons why I love the game, is baseball to me is the closest athletic endeavor to the human experience that we have, where you are at it every single day. And more often than not, you know, when it comes to baseball and when it comes to life too, you're going to fail. You hit 300, you're a Hall of Famer, but guess what? That means you failed 7 out of 10 times. And the crux of baseball is how you deal with that failure and get back up and try and do a little bit better the next day. And I think that's very much the human condition as well, and part of the American condition as well, is how do we do a little bit better tomorrow? How do we make our lives a little bit better tomorrow for ourselves and for our families and for our communities? And I think that's why the human condition and why the sport of baseball are so closely tied together. And so when we see greatness on the baseball field, 500 home runs, or, you know, a batting title for Bobby Witt Jr. last year at 332, I think we appreciate the greatness striving through the grind of everyday suffering and excellence. And we can appreciate that in a very special way. And that to me is why baseball is so special and why baseball records are a little bit more hallowed than others, maybe.
Jake Eisenberg, thinking of records, Bink was asking you about records there. This weekend, you know, you're just going to have a no-hitter to call. It's going to be nice for you.
Yeah, sign me up for that. That'd be great.
We'll be listening. Thanks, Jake.
Take care, guys.
So that was Jake Eisenberg a little bit earlier today. He joins us each and every Friday throughout the baseball season. You hear him here on 96.5 The Fan. You also at times will see him over on FanDuel Sports Network as well. We're about 10 minutes away from a Fan Club Friday here. Jackson Kurtz from Channel 9 going to join us in studio. But first, Drew, let's get to it.
Random question.
All right. For you, Gold, for you, Bink, text line as well, 913-586-7965. We're going to go back to something we talked about a little bit earlier. Some people had some thoughts. Want you to text in again. Weird sports injuries that we've had. I think we've all had, well, I mean, it could be sports related. It could not be technically, because going back to Freddie Freeman, getting into the shower, having a mishap with the ankle that he had repaired. You can take your guesses as to how that actually happened. Uh-huh. He was getting into the shower, apparently, when he had an issue with said ankle. 913-586-7965. What is a weird injury story that we've dealt with, or weird thing that has happened where we got hurt?
Yeah, I'm curious to see where the texts go. Also, don't forget the random question of the day is brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Results every week, and then receive free support for life online at awaken180weightloss.com. I told you, for me, if it relates to sports at all, the embarrassing one for sure is just the time I had to have surgery on a broken pinky because of a flag football game in high school. And so all of a sudden I looked down and my left pinky was way out there. And I showed you guys earlier, if you're watching on the video stream, like one pinky is completely straight. The other one kind of like goes in a little bit. And that's because I had a couple pins put in my pinky. So that was an embarrassing one at the time. That's for sure.
Did we have any injuries at our combine? We used to do the combine.
Like no, a couple of us fell during the 40-yard dash though.
Okay.
And by a couple of us, I'm included in that. Yeah.
There's another one. So I shared the one of, I was golfing in the the club shaft broke or snapped, and it cut my finger open and had to go to the ER. But there's another one. So
the ER, that deep of a cut.
Oh, it was urgent care, I guess. It was not
okay.
ER.
Okay. But, well, still,
I think it was six stitches, something like that. But anyways, there's another one. The only thing that I've ever broken bone-wise in my body is my wrist. I was playing two-hand touch football in the backyard. We're playing.
What were you doing?
Playing two-hand touch football.
Okay.
Jeez. You know, you take it way too far.
You just said how you were hurt earlier.
Jeez. Okay. Anyways.
Uh-huh.
I'm playing two-hand touch football.
Watching a Bengals game.
Drew can't even make it through the segment now. Look what you've done. He's blushing.
Anyways, it's raining outside. The way that our backyard works is there is a big hill.
Okay.
So our backyard from the house goes out maybe 10 feet and then goes down a hill. I'm running down the hill to try and get somebody because we kicked the ball off. I'm trying to get somebody. They make a move and it's rain. Like it's raining outside. They make a juke move and I totally slip, try to break my fall. Bang.
Oh, broke your wrist.
Wrist breaks.
Yeah. What did people say you did that hurt that wrist? That had to be a running joke wherever you were, the school or whatever.
No, I said I was playing two-hand touch football. slipped and I broke my fall.
I would have had so much fun with that.
From the 816, someone says their boy works for UPS. Was delivering a package, slipped on ice, broke his fibula, had an army crawl back to his UPS van because his phone was in his truck. That's brutal.
Jeez.
That is brutal.
Oh, my goodness.
Someone says they tore their ACL hopping a four-foot fence. Four-foot fence.
Tough. You could be like the Atlanta Hawks fan the other day who tore their ACL doing the doing the contest at halftime.
I know he signed a waiver, but he's still going to sue the Hawks.
I mean, he's not going to get anything, though. Yes, how is he?
That waiver, he can still sue.
My friend Tank once threw his back out and fell between his couch and the recliner. Mm-hmm. He was trying to talk into one of his pets into pushing over his cell phone. He was trying to talk to his pet into bringing his phone so he could call for help.
From the 816, I got a mild concussion from getting something out of the bottom drawer in the fridge. When I quickly raised back up, I hit my head on the top freezer door handle and literally knocked myself out for 30 seconds.
Oh, wow.
That's crazy.
That's one of the wilder ones. Someone also said from the 816. No, the 913. Torn ACL playing disc golf.
Oh, no.
I believe it. I once was in Nashville at a hotel at the Opryland Hotel, which is like one of the largest in America outside of having a casino. I think it is the largest. And the pin fell out when I pulled the bar down and it hit me in the head, knocked me out. I lost my wedding ring. Like, I don't know how.
Lost the wedding ring.
I think I'd taken it off to work out, but I forgot about it. And so I had to walk with my hand in my pants for like a long time just so my wife wouldn't see it. Sound familiar, Drew? So I did that, and so she didn't see it.
Hang on a second. Excuse me? Sound familiar? Relax. Jeez. Trying to throw me under the bus. I didn't do anything.
Text we had earlier was the best one, I think. Someone said they were teaching a kid's baseball team, coaching a kid's baseball team. And they were teaching the kids bunt drill. And the coach bunted the ball back at his nose, broke his nose while he was trying to teach the kids how to bunt.
Wow. Well, Kevin Apier once got hurt carrying his sister's baby shower gifts and had tore his labrum and was gone in the 98 season that happened.
This person said they broke their collarbone walking their dog.
Did the dog take off and you tripped and fell and hit the sidewalk? I'm guessing it's something like
Derek
that.
Derek Holland tripping on his dog's leash.
That's true. We'll ask our guest here for Fan Club Friday coming up with the next segment in the next hour, the same question. Jackson Kurtz joins us for a Fan Club Friday next.